What happens when you're unwilling to let go of a lifestyle you're no longer able to afford? Bill Thompson grew up in a well-to-do family and so was accustomed to having money, always getting everything he wanted. As an adult, Thompson became a commodities trader and with his family bought a home on Chicago's North Shore. But at the age of 35, he lost his job. From there, he bounced around trying to make ends meet. Eventually, bills couldn't be paid. The bank was threatening to foreclose on his house, and it created tensions at home. Things started unraveling.
This job didn't work out. That job didn't work out. And it's something that kept happening over and over. And what it did to me, it just ground me down. I just saw things slipping away to where I didn't know where I was going to land. I guess Confucius called it death by a thousand cuts. You know, it wasn't any one big thing, but it was a series of things that just puts you into this spiral of disillusionment and depression. And then in the spring of 1997, my son was on his way home from school. He darts out in front of a car, and he gets hit by the car. He was seven. As I go and try to get his medical bills paid for, the insurance company says to me, "It's contributory negligence. We don't owe you anything. You know, you're on your own." We were virtually empty. I mean, I've got no money. I've got $3,000 in hospital bills at the emergency room. I've got probably another $3,000 to $4,000 for his dental. All his teeth were cracked, and they didn't know how they were going to put them back together. And there was a reminder every day of his injuries when I saw him. To see this kid suffering like he was, the pressure that I was under and the guilt I felt for not providing for him and not knowing what I was going to do about that, that was the part that really put it over the edge for me. So at this point, I'm taking Zoloft. I'm mentally ill. I'm depressed. I'm mentally ill. I'm desperate. And I'm fed up with my situation in my household. And so I start planning my way out. I start to look around at places where there are money and places that are easy to get money. So instead of checking myself into some sort of emergency room or hospital of some sort, I start robbing places. I'm thinking, well, where can I walk in where there's a cash register where they have a couple $100 so I can make my car payment? So I start going into dry cleaners. What I do is I say I'm going someplace and I take the car out and I just park in front of these places trying to think about how I'm going to get some money. After about 3 days of telling my wife that I have money coming to her, I've got to do it. It's totally irrational. My thinking is so twisted that I'm thinking that I've got to do it or everything's going to come tumbling down. I mean, I'm at the situation where it doesn't really matter what happens to me. If I get caught, I get away from this terrible situation I'm in. I'm thinking, what do I have to lose? Well, I had a green Caravan. In order not to get caught driving away or have the plates spotted, I went and I stole some license plates. I had some glue and I glued some magnets on the back of the plate. I would just put it over the real plate, and then when I was done, I would take that plate off so that my plate couldn't be traced. And I got my kid's camp pistol that we had taken away from my son because his mother and I didn't want to play with guns. The cap pistol was a plastic handgun, but on the end of the barrel it had a red plug. So anybody that looked at it knew it wasn't real, but you could stick it through the coat and make it look like it was real, or you could take a screwdriver and make it look like you had a gun. I mean, you know, when you're doing the big jobs, you got to take the heavy armor. Oh, the first time I was just like scared to death. I just had a raincoat on and a hat. It was a Cubs hat. And I went into a dry cleaner's. And it's probably about 85 degrees out, so I'm looking very strange to begin with. And I wait till everybody leaves, and I pretend like I've got some garment or something, and I say, I've got a gun, and she looks at me, and she just, she looks quizzical, and she goes, kind of, what? And then I realize she doesn't speak English. She calls somebody up to the front of the register that speaks English, and now the whole thing's blown, so I turn around and walk out. When nothing happened to me at that point, I said, well, next time you should stick around and get the money. So the first one that's successful, I walk into a cleaner, as I said, I had a gun, open the drawer. It was sort of like a learning process as I went along. It was scary. You could tell I was nervous. I mean, I don't know, I didn't use any voice. I didn't act like I was going to jump the counter and pistol whip the guy or anything like that. It was more like I was panhandling. I think I got 180. It was enough to placate my wife at the time, as I recall. And it was just that simple. It wasn't simple emotionally or anything, but physically it was a very simple thing to do. There's all sorts of things that can, what they call, go wrong. One time I went in dry cleaners down in 4th and Linden, Wilmette, and I saw my neighbor in there, and I just ducked my head and walked out. I think I did two cleaners, a bakery store and a cigar store. And when I went in the cigar store, this woman was in there. And so I'm dressed, I got my robbery outfit, and everybody leaves the store. And so I point my screwdriver at her, and she starts saying, you don't look like the type of person to do this. And I said, well, I'm not, but I'm desperate. And I start to have this conversation with her. She says, well, you don't have to do this. There's ways that people can help you. She was doing social work while she was being robbed. And I try to act real mean and fierce and everything. And I don't want to have a conversation with her because I wanted to get out of there. And she finally opened the drawer, and I took the money, and I drove away. You know, I felt badly. I mean, it was like, oh, what am I doing here, you know? I guess, you know, I didn't look like somebody who was going to hurt somebody. I look like more like an accountant than a bank robber, basically. Or, you know, some guy that lives on the North Shore, which I was. So I decide I'm not getting enough money, so I'm going to stick up a bank. Now I'm looking for something where I can, you know, pay the bills for a couple of months instead of $150 to go down and buy groceries. There's this bank in Wilmette on the corner of Ridge and Lake. It's like a storefront bank. It's not really a bank with big pillars and all that stuff. It's in like a strip mall. And I go in there and I walk up to the teller and I hand her the note. The note says, this is a bank robbery. I have a gun. Put the money in the bag. And I had her put the money in the bag. And I walk. I'm not running or anything like that. I'm trying to be as calm as I can be. Nobody stops me. I walked out and drove away. And I think it was something like $900, which gets it so that I can pay some bills. And I remember at that point, right after that one, I remember being a little bit happy. You know, it took some of the tremendous pressure off me, maybe for just a day or two or whatever. But the pressure is still on. I mean, so I got to go do another bank. So I go and I find a little storefront bank. And so I finally muster up enough courage to go in there and I make out the note and everything in my cryptic handwriting. And I walk into the teller and I hand her the note and she looks at me and she goes, don't be ridiculous. She laughs at me. She says, I'm not giving you any money. And so I'm just totally shocked. I said, well, aren't these people supposed to like do what you say when you're robbing a bank? And this woman says, don't be ridiculous, get out of here. And so I leave. I mean, I was told what to do, so I just leave. So I get out and I start driving thinking, well, that was, you know, bad. And so it's only about 4 blocks away from the police station or 5 blocks or whatever. Evidently they spotted the van. And so I was arrested and it was over. I was just relieved that my life was going to change at that point. And I didn't know whether it would be for the worse or the better or anything else. It was one of those things where I was just relieved. I immediately confessed everything and I waived the grand jury process. And I got sentenced to 51 months. It was It was the end of my marriage whenever this happened. I couldn't just walk away, but I chose to do it in the worst possible way because I didn't know any other way out. I mean, the change at that time was so frightening to me. I had to put myself in a situation where I was forced to change as opposed to doing it on my own. But to have that burden put on my family was a terrible, terrible thing that I did. The worst thing about being in prison is, for me, was being disconnected with my children and what I've done to them. That's the absolute worst. You know, I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to make some amends to them without destroying who I am. And I wasn't robbing banks to get rich. To me, it was never really about money. It was just about surviving. And survival then meant maintaining a certain lifestyle that I couldn't maintain. Survival now doesn't mean having to keep up any appearances. I mean, I just am who I am. It just relates to my health and my family relationships, taking care of those. And if I can take care of those, I feel successful.